For our Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting U.S. criticism of a Syria-Russia meeting in Moscow. The United States Wednesday was critical of the Tuesday extraordinary meeting in Moscow between the presidents of Syria and Russia. A White House spokesman says Vladimir Putin's red carpet treatment for Bashar al-Assad, given the Syrian leader's use of chemical weapons against his own people, is at odds with Russia's stated goal of a political transition. He said Moscow's propping up the Syrian leader despite his launching of a civil war, allowing extremists to flourish and creating a humanitarian crisis. Another U.S. spokesman, John Kirby, says Washington was not surprised by the visit but is keeping its eye on the goal of a political solution.
What we want to do is focus on trying to get real possibilities here for a political transition. We recognize that that's more difficult to do when the Assad regime feels more emboldened and more empowered by the extra support that they get from the Russian military.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is to meet Friday with U.S., Turkish, and Saudi diplomats on Syria. French President Francois Hollande Wednesday met with his Malian counterpart in Paris, promising support for the beleaguered country's efforts at economic development.
Mais nous devons également appuyer le développement
économique. Mr. Hollande says France needs to serve as an example of encouraging French business to offer products, services, and investments in Mali.
Pour nous, il ne saurait y avoir d'amitié sans considération et sans respect.
President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta spoke of the enduring friendship between the two countries. It was the first state visit by a Malian leader to France since independence in 1960 and came on the eve of an international conference on the African country's economic recovery and development scheduled in Paris. French military intervention in 2013 helped drive Islamist militants out of the country's north. This is VOA News. The U.S., Britain, France, and Germany have called on the U.N. Iran Sanctions Committee to take action regarding a missile test they say violated a U.N. resolution. The resolution prohibits Iran from conducting launches of ballistic missiles capable of delivering nuclear warheads. Tehran said earlier this month it had tested a new precision-guided missile but denied it was capable of carrying nuclear weapons. Meanwhile, Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has endorsed the country's nuclear deal with world powers but warned the agreement suffers from what he called ambiguities and structural weaknesses. But he warned such weaknesses could damage the country in the future and as well as the present. His endorsement drew this response from U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry.
I believe they're going to comply because I don't think any country destroys two-thirds of its centrifuges and ships out its enrichment and negates its R&D on advanced centrifuges and does a whole lot of things unless, in fact, they intend to try to comply.
The agreement has been the subject of fierce debate in Iran, with hardliners arguing Tehran gave up too much ground in the talks. UN and European Union officials on Wednesday pledged support to help Somali refugees return to their homes following decades of conflict. Antonio Guterres, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, spoke in Brussels.
Things are getting better in Somalia. And so it is not only the duty, but it's in the interest of the international community to fully support Somalia in this very crucial moment for the country.
The plan involves $500 million over the next 2 years to help repatriate at least some of more than 2 million Somalis. Somalia's prime minister in Brussels said his country is working hard to create a stable government. Britain and China have signed deals worth more than $60 billion as President Xi Jinping met with Prime Minister David Cameron during the second of 4 days of a state visit to Britain. Mr. Cameron said he wants Britain to be the partner of choice for China, and that, he said, would give London a platform to seek improvements in China's human rights record. Mr. Xi said China had, quote, found a path of human rights development suited to China's national conditions. The UN envoy to Libya Wednesday said consultations between warring factions in the North African country will continue after the head of the internationally recognized parliament rejected the latest UN plan to form a national unity government, ending 4-year crisis. Bernardino Leon has held months of talks on a 6-member executive council. Both sides have raised objections. Two Nigerian soldiers killed, several wounded Wednesday in a foiled suicide attack blamed on suspected Boko Haram militants. In the southeast of Niger, the attack occurred in Diffa near the Nigerian border. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There were more protests Wednesday in Congo-Brazzaville against Sunday's referendum to extend President Nguesso's rule.
Mr. Benito Nguesso wants to change all the constitution to go to ask for a third mandate. This is not allowed by the actual constitution.
Perfect Colette is leader of the opposition Congolese Movement for Democracy and Development. Meanwhile, the opposition has called on the international community to ensure that the constitution is not violated. University student protests in South Africa over tuition increases turned violent on Wednesday. And campaigning is in full swing for Sunday's presidential election in Ivory Coast.
Nous avons réglé le problème du déficit d'eau à Abidjan.
Ouattara says he's very proud to be able to say that in 3.5 years, he managed to fix the issue of water shortages in Abidjan.
That's VOA reporter Emily Yop in Abidjan. With Ebola on the decline, caring for survival is another challenge facing Sierra Leone, and the lifting of U.S. travel ban brings relief to Kenya's coastal areas. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. More protests were reported Wednesday in the Republic of Congo's capital, Brazzaville, after clashes between opposition supporters and security forces left several dead. The opposition is protesting a constitutional referendum that would pave the way for longtime President Denis Sassou Nguesso to extend his rule. Nick Long reports from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Reports said several dozen youths tried to put up roadblocks on an avenue near Brazzaville's airport Wednesday and that police responded by firing tear gas. A group of protesters also gathered outside a police station in the Makalele district, prompting the army to send troops there. But elsewhere, a tense calm seemed to have been restored after Tuesday's violence. An activist with the Human Rights Association in Brazzaville, Luamba Moke, told VOA at midday Wednesday that he had not heard any gunshots, but the capital streets were less busy than usual.
He says people are cautious about going out and a lot of people have not gone to work and are staying at home while the police are at all the main traffic junctions.
Amnesty International has called for the security forces to refrain from using excessive force against protesters. Ilaria Allegrozzi is an Amnesty researcher.
D'après nos sources, nous avons compté 5 morts, dont 2 à Pointe-Noire et plusieurs blessés.
She says, according to Amnesty sources, 5 people have died in the violence, including 2 at the coastal city Pointe-Noire, and others were wounded. She adds that the demonstrations started at Pointe-Noire on Saturday, and protests spread to all the main towns in the country. The violence on Tuesday broke out after the government banned an opposition rally against Sunday's constitutional referendum. Congolese voters are being asked to abolish a 2-term limit for presidents and an age restriction that bars candidates over age 70 from running for the office. Removing those restrictions would allow Nguesso, who has ruled the country for more than 30 years, to continue as president. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
An opposition leader in Congo-Brazzaville says opposition and civil society groups will meet with envoys of the United States and the European Union today, Thursday, to talk about the political situation in the country. Perfect Kalela of the opposition Congolese Movement for Democracy and Development says high on the agenda will be a suggestion for dialogue to help end the ongoing violence in the country. Kalela's comments came after police violently clashed with opposition supporters, killing at least 4 people and injuring many more. Kalela tells reporter Peter Clarty that President Nguesso and his ruling party want to contravene the constitution by holding what he calls an illegal referendum on Sunday.
Now, in Congo Brazzaville, we are fighting. Our main struggle is to install a true democracy in Congo Brazzaville. But the president, Denis Sassou Nguesso, wants to change the constitution of Congo Brazzaville. It's not allowed to change the constitution. Therefore, people are fighting, are opposed to this changement of constitution. We are calling international community to help us to stop this. We are looking for an international mediator to come to Congo Brazzaville in order to have a talk with Mr. Denis Sassou Nguesso.
The president, Sassou Nguesso, is saying that This should be put in a referendum to allow the people of Congo Republic to decide whether they want to amend the constitution for him to seek another term or not. Why do you think that is a bad idea?
Mr. Denis Sassou Nguesso want to change all the constitution to go to ask for a third mandate. This is not allowed by the actual constitution. Therefore, we are fighting, we are telling to him the referendum, the actual referendum is asking to, he wants him to go, is not constitutionally acceptable.
Have you officially written a letter to this organization, international organization, to come to Congo, Brazzaville?
Yes, we did it. We went to the UA. We asked them to do that. We have also a talk with the ambassador of the United States. We have also a talk with ambassador of the European Union. They are pushing to go to the third dialogue. Even tomorrow, they ask us to go to a meeting, the European Union, and the ambassador of the United States asked us to go to the meeting in order to see if it is possible to install a new dialogue with the President Denis Sassou Nguesso and his political party.
Are all opposition parties united on this stance that you want to hold a dialogue and to prevent President Sassou Nguesso from seeking another mandate?
The political position in Congo Brazzaville is only we are in a two platform, IDC and FOCAD, and both are ready to go to the talk.
Perfect Colas is the leader of the opposition Congolese Movement for Democracy and Development. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from the capital, Brazzaville. The electoral campaign for Sunday's presidential election in Ivory Coast has entered the home stretch. More than 6 million people are expected to go to the polls this Sunday to elect a president. Incumbent Alassane Ouattara is running for his second term and will face seven other candidates. Emily Yap reports from Abidjan.
After a tour of various provinces in Ivory Coast, incumbent President Alassane Ouattara is now visiting neighborhoods of Abidjan, the country's biggest city, for the last few days of the electoral campaign. He's running for a second five-year term in presidential elections set for October 25th and says his track record during his first term speaks for itself.
Moi, je suis très fier de pouvoir dire que en 3 ans et demi, nous avons réglé le problème du déficit d'eau à Abidjan.
Ouattara says he's very proud to be able to say that in 3.5 years he managed to fix the issue of water shortages in Abidjan, and that when it comes to health and education, he says, everybody also knows what has been achieved. The poll is crucial for the country, as post-election violence in 2010 between supporters of Ouattara and of then-president Laurent Gbagbo killed more than 3,000 people. Ultimately, Gbagbo was arrested and Ouattara became president. Ouattara is heavily favored to win the election. He's backed by one of the country's biggest party, the PDCI, and he faces a divided opposition. Ouattara's main contestant is Pascal Affien-Guesson, the official candidate of the Ivorian Popular Front, Gbagbo's party. But some pro-Gbagbo hardliners within the party resent him for taking part in the elections and have called for a boycott of the elections unless Gbagbo, who is currently awaiting trial at the International Criminal Court, is released. Earlier this week, Nguesson tried to reconcile the party's diverging factions.
Nous allons gagner les élections.
He says the party will win the elections, it will form a government, and will get Laurent Gbagbo out of jail. From his prison cell, Gbagbo said he is not endorsing any candidate for the upcoming elections. Other opposition candidates claim the conditions have not been met for a free and fair election. Among several accusations, they say the voter list contains double-listed names and that the Electoral Commission is biased in favor of Ouattara. Two candidates already have pulled out. But the Electoral Commission keeps on repeating that its goal is to have peaceful elections. The country is expecting 7,000 local and international observers around the country. Emilia Fraviue News from Abidjan.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 22nd. Please send your comments and viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. We give a shout out to listeners on our VOA frequency station in Abidjan, Ivory Coast. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Student protests in South Africa over tuition increases turned violent on Wednesday when riot police used stun grenades to disperse the students who had gathered outside the parliament building. The students say the tuition increases are intended to force poor black students out of the education system. Three top universities were shut down earlier this week due to the protests, and some remain closed. Some of the students likened their treatment in front of the parliament building to the 1976 Soweto uprising, when police killed at least 69 students who were protesting against plans to teach them in Afrikaans. Darryl Glaser is head of the political science department at Witwatersrand University. He said the students had gone to the parliament building to get Finance Minister Nene to speak to them.
I believe the main objective, apart from just the symbolic value of protesting in front of parliament, was to persuade the Minister of Higher Education, who was present in parliament during a budget address. The idea was to persuade him to come and address the students. And as in some of those other cases, when he actually tried to address the students were not particularly receptive. There's a very kind of electric and radical atmosphere amongst the students. They're not particularly polite or patient. They're feeling very angry, not only about a huge fee increase that many university students feel they can't afford, especially the poorer ones, but I think they're feeling angry and disappointed about the condition of South Africa generally. Many young people don't feel that apartheid democratic society has provided the kind of deliverance that they had hoped for and that they feel entitled to.
So you're saying, Professor, that this protest is not just about the rise in tuition, but an overall frustration with the situation in the country?
Yes, and in between those points is the general frustration with the state of higher education and with perception, especially amongst black students, that the higher education system is too dominated by white and perhaps members of other racial minorities and non-South Africans, that is too dominated by academics from those various backgrounds rather than proportionately representing black African people.
Has the government, President Jacob Zuma, has he responded so far to the protest and the demand of the students?
Well, Jacob Zuma has involved himself in various consultations, emergency consultations and summits with vice chancellors or the principals of the various universities. So he's been involved to that extent. But, you know, in general, on this issue, as on many other issues, he gives the impression of being not particularly interested in policy and not particularly in touch and empathetic these days.
It could not be that bad, because I was reading a comment from one of the students suggesting that comparing what happened in front of Parliament on Wednesday to the 1976 Soweto uprising.
I think that the comparison with 1976 probably comes from some students who are caught up in the romance and excitement of the moment and perhaps who wish they had been there at a time like 1976 when they were fighting, you know, an evil dictatorship. We're no longer dealing with an evil dictatorship. We're dealing with a democratic government, unfortunately one that has failed to meet people's expectations and does not seem to get electorally punished for many policy failures, but it's not the apartheid regime.
So, Professor, what happens now? Is your university reopened?
No, the universities are, well, several of them, including my own, Witwatersrand University, are indefinitely shut. Supposedly we're going to open on Monday, but some people are skeptical about whether that's going to happen.
Darryl Glaser is the head of the political science department at Witwatersrand University. He was speaking with me from Johannesburg. Sierra Leone may be declared Ebola-free in early November, but caring for the country's 4,051 Ebola survivors remains a big challenge. Many survivors report joint pain and visual problems. As Nina DeVries reports from Freetown, experts also are worried about the risk of relapse and how long the virus can stay in a survivor's body.
Fatmata Conte lives in the village of Rakupa, an eastern part of Freetown. Since she survived Ebola, she's been experiencing joint pain. Speaking in her native Creole language, she says this has even caused her to stop work as a petty trader. She says she doesn't have the money to pay the house rent, and it's stressful. But there is some help, and Conte has been getting free medical treatment at a clinic for Ebola survivors run by Doctors Without Borders, or MSF. The MSF field coordinator for the Ebola survivors program, Patrick Try, says one of the biggest concerns is that patients are having so many health complications. The health system was not strong before Ebola, and he worries how it will manage now.
The human resources is not enough. We have a problem with the referral system because we have very limited referral points. We don't have plenty of specialists in the country.
Concern also is rising over how long the virus can stay in an Ebola survivor. A Scottish nurse, Pauline Cafferty, who caught Ebola in Sierra Leone last year, had an apparent relapse of the virus earlier this month. According to a BBC report, the virus was lingering in her brain and caused her to catch meningitis. A recent study shows the virus can stay in semen for up to 9 months, and it's also known to stay in eye fluids after recovery. This has ophthalmologist Dr. Matthew Vandy worried.
The simple fact that the virus, the persistence, the presence of Ebola virus in the eye. So it's a big challenge. Because as we have, I have said already, that cataract is a major cause of blindness. And the only treatment for it is surgery. So if somebody is having a live virus, you go and operate that person, there's a danger that you'll be dealing with the virus, touching the virus.
Vandy is pushing for a study to be done in Sierra Leone specifically on how long the virus can stay in a survivor's eye. Conte has concerns too.
I'm still worried back again.
She says she's worried because we do not know enough about this disease and there is still so much to study. For now, she's just hoping her treatments will help her health complications improve. There are about 17,000 Ebola survivors in West Africa. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Tourism operators in coastal Kenya are welcoming a decision by the United States to lift travel restrictions for much of the area. The ban prevented U.S. government personnel from visiting the coast and discouraged many tourists from doing the same. VOA's Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's coast offers beautiful beaches, good food, nice resorts, and a relaxed atmosphere. But Al-Shabaab attacks and crime threats have hurt tourism. Now the U.S. has lifted travel bans to much of the coast, from the town of Malindi down to areas near the border with Tanzania. Travel to Lamu Island, another popular destination on the Indian Ocean, remains restricted. This is Tiffany McGriff, press attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi.
The reason why we lifted the restrictions, while terror and crime threats remain throughout Kenya, the specific circumstances that led to the restriction in the coastal area south from Malindi have changed significantly as a result of positive action by the government of Kenya.
Britain lifted a travel warning to the same areas in June. And Susan Ongalo, acting CEO of the Kenya Tourism Federation, couldn't be happier.
Let me tell you, it is going to be a big boost to that region because looking at the previous month to June, tourism at the coast was really bad. And then in June, the UK revised their advisory. And now this is a big boost.
Ongalo says tourism drives the coast's economy.
I would say it is the biggest supporter of the coast economy because I wouldn't compare it to anything else.
The U.S. travel restrictions primarily affected U.S. government personnel, who were officially prohibited from visiting the region. But tourism operators say the restrictions deterred other tourists, some of whom found these kinds of bans invalidated their travel insurance. Mohammed Omar, general manager at Leopard Resort and Spa in Diani, south of Mombasa.
You know, the thing is, majorly UK and US are what people are looking at. Even if there are certain countries that do not have bans in terms of traveling, normally they would like to look at those two to see what's going on.
Tracy Peary, who manages the Flamboyant Hotel in Diani, says that because of security fears, as well as many foreign diplomatic staff and UN employees being banned from visiting the region, her business has dropped nearly 80% over the last 18 months.
We lost a lot of reservations. We lost a lot of Nairobi reservations because they said they weren't allowed to travel to the coast any longer.
Even though the official ban is gone, a U.S. State Department travel warning advising Americans of the risks of visiting Kenya is still in effect. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. Mali edged Ecuador 2-1 in a Group D tie at the FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Talca, Chile, on Wednesday. The victory strengthens Mali's chances of advancing to the knockout stage of the contest, having played to a scoreless draw against group leaders Belgium in their opening encounter. Today, Thursday, it's do or die for South Africa when they play North Korea in Group D action in Concepcion. South Africa lost their opening group tie to Costa Rica and need a win today to get their campaign back on track. In Switzerland, Nigeria's former FIFA Executive Committee member Amos Adamu is among several former and current FIFA executive members under investigation, the FIFA Independent Ethics Committee revealed in Zurich on Wednesday. This revelation comes barely 24 hours after FIFA Executive Committee granted the FIFA Independent Ethics Committee leeway to disclose to the public at their discretion what they are doing. Besides Adamu, Germany's Franz Beckenbauer, Spain's FIFA Vice President Angel Marie Villar, Thailand's Warawi Makudi, Cayman Islands Jeffrey Webb, Brazil's Ricardo Teixeira, Uruguay's Eugenio Figueiredo, and Paraguay's Nicolas Loez are under investigation. The FIFA Ethics Committee also confirmed that FIFA President Sepp Blatter, FIFA Vice President Michel Platini, and FIFA Secretary General Jerome Vaux, who are serving a 90-day suspension, are also under investigation. In Tunis, defending champions Libya face Morocco in an African Nations Championship CHAN qualifier in the Tunisian capital Tunis today, Thursday. Having lost by a solitary goal to Tunisia last week, Libya need to triumph against Morocco to stand a chance of winning the three-way North Africa qualifier and proceed to defend their CHAN title at the contest in Rwanda scheduled for early next year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. An opposition leader in Congo-Brazzaville says opposition and civil society groups will meet with envoys of the United States and the European Union today, Thursday, to talk about the political situation in the country. Perfect Colas of the opposition Congolese Movement for Democracy and Development says high on the agenda will be a suggestion for dialogue to help end the ongoing violence in the country. And that's it for this Thursday, October 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of The Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.
voaafrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
All day, all night.